Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James. Learn, laugh, play.
It is like Blue's Clues.
Only it is more black and more gay.
And more ladylike. This week on Minority Corner.
Ooh, what do you got in Aneke's kitty kitty cat corner time?
Well, it is not that, but...
Well, that's what's in the show notes here.
That's what you put in the show notes.
It says Aneke kitty kitty cat corner time.
As a placeholder. When I told you explicitly when I was driving...
Oh, that's true.
That I'm talking about, it is POC Poets Roundup.
Okay, all right. So,
people of color poets.
Oh, that,
we're gonna talk about you.
It's almost like I had precognition about that because I wrote in the show notes, Aneke's Kitty Kitty Cat Corner Time, and some might say that is poetry. Some might. Okay. Apparently not.
Sure.
Apparently
yeah,
not you.
Okay, yeah,
no, I saw that face you made.
I was thinking, and I was like, you know what? I agree.
I also had to add an extra kitty because it would have been Kitty Cat Corner, and that's 3 Ks.
No, that's, like we said, we never go.
2 Ks are okay.
2 or 4.
2 or 4. 3.
Or 4.
No.
3, get out of my face.
Get out of my face. So Kitty Kitty Cat Corner time. Well. Well,
what are you talking about?
Well, it is still the month of women.
It is.
Well, in honor of that, I want to do something. I want to honor historical female trans figures.
Ooh, that sounds awesome.
Because
I am into
these
that.
Ladies were left out of all of our history books from even, I would even say, the LGBT history books. Because these are women that I have not really heard about. So we're going to broaden your horizons. Today.
Yes, we're going to do some information in your brains.
Information, it's going to get in your brains, and it's going to be in there, and we're going to shake it up.
Shake it up, shake it up.
Shake up your brain. Kitty cat corner time. Kitty cat corner time.
Say what?
Don't look at me, Aneke. Don't look at me.
Why? What's going on?
I have been horribly disfigured today.
You look the same.
No. Aneke, I was eating a salad.
Yes.
And I chipped my tooth. Like,
on
there
what?
Goes...
On a hard lettuce leaf?
On my fork. On my metal fork.
What are you aggressively eating that salad?
Just gotta get them leafy greens in. Well, no more. I chipped my fucking tooth. I can't do this. My face is my fortune.
I'm looking at your teeth right now through the magic of the interwebs.
My award-winning smile. See, it's right.
Yeah. I literally don't see anything. Also, like you put your fingernail in the camera, so.
Oh, so you couldn't see it. It's the front part of my tooth, and it's gone, and I now have a face for radio.
What are you going to do? No.
This is all you guys get. You will never see this face.
No, you know what you need to do, James? You need to just call it a day, get a gold cap
okay.
on your front tooth, and then I think it will be like your calling card.
Okay, I thought you actually... Okay, I was like, oh, Aneke, sound librarian woman, my sister.
What, you don't like that?
I mean, I'm not... We're brainstorming here, so yeah. I'm not going to say no to any ideas.
Okay, here's another one.
Here we go.
I'm just shooting you ideas. I'm working things out.
Just spitballing here, just seeing what's up. Yeah, what else you got?
Some people get diamonds implanted in their teeth.
Okay.
Why don't you get a diamond implanted in the space where you chipped it?
Okay, so I have... But then someone might want to rob me. But I would need I would need a cute nickname to go with that. I'd need to be called like J-Dye.
You would be like
Jammy Diamond.
Jimin.
Okay. All right. Now, well, with that, people might think that I'm like some actor from like England or something, and they would actually hire
like
me.
Jimin.
That's fair. But like, yeah. So, and then the worst part about it was it was painful at first, and then I accidentally ate the rest of it.
Oh no, James!
Because I was like, I don't remember that crunchy ingredient being...
You were aggressively eating that salad.
Well, I mean, this just goes to everybody. I was not mindfully eating, and that's exactly what happened. And the worst part about it is it just makes me feel like that shit doesn't grow back. I am 31...
No, you just...
It's gone. It's not like I
You just go. Do you have a dentist?
No, I'm an artist.
Oh, shit. Because if, like, you just went to the dentist, they'd, like, you know, paint some enamel over it.
It just sucks. It reminds you of, like, well, I'm dying. My body is decaying.
You're not dying.
Well, my body is decaying. Like, it's just what happens. Like, it's like...
Your tooth didn't fall out.
You know, my hair will grow... Hair grows back. Like, I just... It's never coming back in, okay? There was something that was a part of me, and it's gone. So treat them well.
Well, yeah, teeth are precious. Teeth are...
Because otherwise, you'll be horribly disfigured like myself. And no offense to anybody who's, like, missing teeth, but, like...
Yeah,
because smile. You see the smile? What am I going to do?
We have a close friend, a friend of the Corner Kids, who I'm not going to name names, but might have been on the podcast once.
But we live in different worlds.
Who
I
has
live
a chip
in a
tooth?
Very I live in a very unforgiving, like, very visually culture profession. It just also happened I'm a little sore, I'm a little raw. Yeah. It's a part of me that was with me for 31 years or, like, whenever that tooth grew in and
yeah,
it's gone.
I'm thinking probably more like 25.
No, I came out with this, it was my first adult tooth and it came in like
your front right tooth.
Mhm. It was ready.
You must have been a wild-looking baby.
Call me Chomper. I was the ugly duckling.
No,
I'm not gonna. I put it all
James.
Out there for all to see. And
James, stop it. You yeah. have a beautiful smile still. It is a little foggy because it is Skype. We are talking across, but I think if you just get some of that enamel, get pro enamel toothpaste, and then it will grow back.
But I can't even shoot toothpaste commercials in the meantime because they'll be like, "Oh, can't do a close up on you. Get the teeth double in." Like, that's gone.
Well, then they're paying two people, you and a tooth double.
Yeah, but they might pay for the extra screen time.
You just created a job.
Oh.
You're a pioneer.
Well, still. I'm feeling raw. I'm feeling raw and edgy. So that happened.
Well, I'm sorry that you're feeling raw and edgy. Your teeth look great.
I miss it. Thank you. Lie to me. Tell me I'm pretty.
Get some Sensodyne so you can eat things and not feel pain in your tooth.
Oh, Lord. I will tell you, my roommates were here when it happened, and I maybe turned up the drama a little bit much. At one point, I flung myself on the bed wailing like Joan Crawford.
I mean, I believe it because I saw your post on Facebook.
Oh, Lord, no! Not my tooth!
Here's the thing. I feel like if your tooth actually fell out, you would probably be, like, way more hushed. You would be like,
oh I know,
no.
Right?
Oh, shit.
Never going to tell anybody about this until this shit gets fixed. And no one will be none the wiser. It's actually just, like, a little part on my front tooth. But, like, I can feel it. It's like something
yeah,
jagged.
Yeah, because teeth are living. Like, it's all protecting it.
This shit needs to grow back. Like Wolverine.
Just stick it in some milk. I don't know.
I can't just put my... the tooth is still in my mouth. Oh, and Aneke, can I just thank you for something?
What did I do?
Everyone, Aneke was there with me in a very tragic Sunday evening.
I'm a very supportive friend.
She is. She is. Everyone, I'm going to give you her phone number right now.
No!
Because when you are in a pinch, she is there for you.
I mean, I wasn't doing nothing on Sunday. It was perfect.
Thank
I was just
God.
Sitting there. Getting these text messages from James that were wild and increasingly more wild.
I was at a rehearsal for a show that I was already on the fence about because I have two gay black musicals coming up and they are
yes.
wildly different. And
yes.
I was giving Aneke the play-by-play because I was like, where the fuck am I?
It was a blow by blow.
It is the first rehearsal, right? And so then all of a sudden the director is just like, all right, everybody get on that stage with all your scripts.
Which, no.
And it's not even a table read. And the first scene has like seven characters on stage. So y'all, if you first rehearsal, you don't just throw seven actors onto a stage with their scripts in hand and just have them try to.
Right. For all of us who have never done theater, which is probably like 2% of you guys, because let's just face it,
everyone,
we attract a theatrical crowd.
That's who we are.
But the first thing, you do not start with blocking, which means knowing where to walk when you're on stage. And this is exactly where your director is starting. And then also, you need to know what you're saying and how you interact with your co-workers. So you need to sit around and read it.
And read it. And also, like, meet each other, maybe get to know each other. We also started, so also give you a little preference. Like, I heard the name Tyler Perry bounced around as an inspiration for this piece. So it's got like, they're like, we love us some Tyler Perry. So
we're
like,
not
okay.
Knocking Tyler Perry.
There's something for everybody, but I'm not
we're
necessarily...
kind of knocking Tyler Perry.
Don't know that's where, listen, if Tyler Perry was like, I need you in your film, in my new film, I'd be like, Tyler, I have to check my schedule. I'm not really sure. Look over there. And then I'd run away.
And into the bush, James.
So it's like this, like, you know, it's this like about this like family, but it's about this kid who comes from home from the Navy, and he comes out and he's gay, and no one knows how to deal with it because it's 2017.
You didn't tell me he was coming home from the Navy.
Oh, yeah, he's coming home from the Navy, and then he has this, and there are three other gay characters in the show, and one of them is a hairdresser. The other one is he designs clothes, and the other one's just the gay uncle, and they are fucking flamboyant as all hell, sexless, right? All of them are sexless.
Yeah.
And part of the storyline is that, like, oh no, the young son has a white boyfriend. What are we gonna do?
Oh my god. Okay, so first off, we are not knocking you know, being a hairdresser or a fashion designer or being a gay uncle.
Not at all.
But all of these are stereotypical portrayals that we cannot seem to shake.
Right. And where the point that they are like, they're sexless. And like, I love playing flamboyant characters because I think it's so empowering. And there's a way to do it. And I was like watching this other person, like it's different when like people are doing it for the joke. But to me, when I'm playing these characters, I'm not the joke. What I'm saying is funny because it's funny. It's not funny because I'm flamboyant and gay. Like, I am not the joke. The joke is what comes out of my mouth, right? You know?
You're just playing a personality, not a clown.
Exactly. And so, they just want this, like, sort of, like, clowny behavior. And then, so, like, just thinking, at first I'm like, okay, I'm giving them props because, like, at least they're trying to, like, you know, it's just like, we started the show off with a prayer. Like, this is a very religious group of people. So it's like, okay, I applaud them for like trying to like do, you know, this show.
Yeah.
And so then what happens is that the kid who comes home from the Navy is doing push-ups in his room. He's like, you're doing push-ups in your room. And then the phone rings and it's the doctor. And the doctor tells him that his test results came in and they're positive. And then the director says, first of all, next time you do the scene, I need more be more angry when you find out about this. It's not a direction to give to somebody. And then
be more angry.
And then he says, just to hold off, everybody, I want to make sure we're all on the same page, okay? We're not saying what it is, the disease that he has. I mean, it could be cancer. But what people in the audience are going to assume, because he's gay, that it's AIDS and that he's dying of AIDS.
And also, let's clarify, you never get diagnosed, you're positive for cancer. What?
And no one, in 2017, you don't go...
You don't get it over the phone. That's so callous and rude.
And it wouldn't be AIDS. Like, this is also just like someone who's, you're so uneducated, it'd be HIV, if anything. And like you said, you wouldn't get over the phone. So, and then he's like, and now...
This is so stereotypical, like somebody's fake imagination.
Oh, and then he's like, now it's a scene where the devil tries to get you to kill yourself. And it's like, okay, so now he's going to try to kill himself for this. And like,
also, James brought this up way, way later. And I didn't even know that the devil was a character in this play.
You're like, oh, right? Okay, so then there's also like this subplot where like Keisha has this abusive husband. No, this abusive boyfriend who's this Rastafarian guy.
Which is like, what?
And so then Artie, the flamboyant, like, seamstress, is the one that has to, like, defend her. And, like, he beats up Tyrone, the Rastafarian, like, abusive boyfriend. So there's this random subplot that Keisha's the only one that gets...
This sounds nuts already. I didn't even know.
Keisha's the best friend's friend who saw...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, right? So it just gets, like, more and more insane and crazy. And so then I'm just like... Mm-mm. And then at the very end, he's like, you know, huddle up, everybody. So,
okay, team building moment.
He's like, you know, this show isn't about, you know, there's the message is not to condone or say against about anything. You know, he's like, it needs to be about love and respect for everyone, even if you don't agree with your lifestyle.
No,
Lord,
bad choice
help
of words,
me.
Sir.
Everything you're saying is awful. Because if you're doing this show, I need to know, person at the wheel, I don't need to debate you about It's not a lifestyle. And then his producing partner's like, she's like, well, there's other examples too. Like Keisha, her friends need to be there for her, even though she chooses to stay with her abusive friend, her boyfriend.
What? No. What?
Oh, yeah. And they want to, you know, tour this show like all over the East Coast. They don't know when the show is going to be. So this is just a disaster. So obviously I'm walking away.
Just get out of there. And also for the quarter kids, if you go to this show, tell us all about it.
The show. Oh, yeah. I was going to say I won't be in it. Thank the Lord that while I'm sitting there in this hot mess rehearsal, I got the script for my sci-fi black queer musical adventure.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
It is. It's like a breath of fresh air where it's like it's doing what this play thinks it's doing, but times 10,000 in a more interesting, better, well-produced way.
There we go. See, this is why we need multiple outlets for a lot of our POCs out there, a lot of us trying to get our voices out, because what if there was only funding for one of those shows and that first one got picked up? We're not saying that all shows by people of color are going to be beautiful works of art.
It's not all going to be Moonlight, okay?
That's why we need to have multiple outlets.
Yes.
So we can see the variety.
And because, and also for some of you who are just like, you just wake up and you're like, I want to put on a show. You should learn the ropes a little bit, because I feel like this is what happened. They're like, I'm going to do a show. I am the next Tyler Perry. And I'll tell you, I heard some of the melodies in the song because he was making everybody sing just half the song. He's like, now you sing half of your song. And I'm pretty sure I grew up in the Baptist church. I was like, I've heard these melodies before. He just took some gospel beats.
Yeah, also.
And put some other words on it.
No.
And he's
no.
like, mama, and also, I'm gay.
James, it should have been a whole nother rehearsal for just the singing with a piano.
No, it was someone playing a karaoke track.
What?
Yeah, it was someone playing a karaoke track at the back. They were also filming the rehearsal too, because they need to show it to investors. And then he lectured everybody at the very end. He was like, I can't believe you guys aren't working harder. We need investors for this show, and I can't invite them to come see this if you guys aren't working hard. It's the first rehearsal. And
this feels like Waiting for Guffman or like one of those parody movies. Like this, you needed to make a mockumentary of this, because this is fucking ridiculous.
And then he texted me this morning, blew up my phone, texted me this morning and was like trying to offer me this other guy's part. And I'm just like, this is a mess. This guy who was like his friend and is the only one that really believes in the show, who's like, yes, this show touches my heart. This show does not touch my heart. This makes me want to burn something.
This show, I mean, I heard it blow by blow by the text message, I was just like, what is happening? But like, hearing you describe it just makes it even more like, what is happening? And I am like so afraid that this is going to be the first time people in like certain communities are exposed to the LGBT viewpoint.
Yeah, I know.
And it's gonna be like, and it's totally not from, like, what?
Well, let's plug ourselves into some POC poetry.
Yes.
I love a bit of poetry in the morning.
Let's just continue with the arts. This is the arts podcast.
Yeah, y'all didn't know. We switched it up on you. Mm-hmm. Get artsified.
About to get fucking NPR on your asses.
And up next, it's Aneke with some poetry. Snap, snap. Ooh. I'm snapping to your poetry.
Yes.
Poetry. Ooh. Snap, snap it up. Not down, but
this
up.
Is a very She's Broadway poetry intro.
On Broadway, they're like, we're going to do some poetry.
We need to do
it's
some
like Fosse snaps.
Fosse dancing to that.
Exactly what it is.
Okay.
She's doing a poem. Okay.
So, I can't take credit for compiling all of this. Actually, we had...
Yes, you can.
Well, I'm taking credit for putting it on the podcast.
Yes, you are. That's you. That's my boo. Okay. She's doing it.
So, Renee N., friend of the podcast and fellow corner kid, she went to the Association of Writers and Writing Programs, which I will be referring to as AWP from now on. They had a giant conference in Washington, D.C., And I was going to go with her, but then I decided not to because I'm overwhelmed with too much shit. And
oh, and then you could have came and said hi to me.
See, it just would have been, you know, it would have been great. If I had more of a carefree, fun lifestyle, a.k.a. independently wealthy, then maybe.
Okay. I was like, but I see you posting to that hashtag carefree black girl. So you are it because you're involved in that hashtag.
Carefree and broke.
It's a new one. Before you go any further, can I pause you in the action really quickly?
Yes.
Can I just say, hey, Renee N, I know you.
You do.
That's all. That's all I just wanted to. She gave me a ride home from your wedding in the mountains.
Oh, my mountain wedding.
She exposed me to, your mountain wedding. She exposed me to lemonade. I wasn't ready.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
That's great. Yeah.
So now she compiled a list of poets that she went to go see. And I was like, give me that list. And so she sent me the list.
You're like, I need content. Give me that. It's true. Hey, that's where I got mine from last week. My friend Danny was like, here's what I was like, give me that article.
I need this.
Same thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she actually wrote down all of these different people. And I was like, I'm going to need some quotes. So she gave me some quotes.
Yeah, you're getting contributor credit, Renee N, up in here, helping Aneke with her homework. You, like, stole her homework.
I did. I never did it in school. So now's the time to pay up. So
yeah,
I'm going to be reading some of these artist names. Please go check them out. I will do my best. You know what? Maybe I'll just share this document. So the first poet on the list is named Danzy Smith. Now, Danzy Smith is a founding member of the Dark Noise Collective with Fatima Agar, Franny Choi, Nate Marshall, Aaron Samuels, and Jamila Wood. Dark Noise is a multiracial, multi-genre collective featuring some of the most exciting, insightful, and powerful spoken word artists performing today. So not only look up Danzy Smith, but also look up Dark Noise Collective. They have a Facebook page that's called Team Dark Noise. So Danzy's newest book is called Boy. His upcoming book is called Don't Call Us Dead. And a lot of his poetry, and I'm saying this on my own because I'm familiar, is he sometimes throws in a little humor, but he is very political. He is a queer black man, and he covers a lot of those intersecting issues, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to read a portion from this one that's called At the Down Low House Party.
Ooh, I don't want to be at that party, but spit me some poetry about it.
Oh, and disclaimer, if you're listening to this with your children, I will be cursing.
Okay, good.
So, Justin, you know, if you don't like them to hear bad language.
I'm going
to
do a test curse, like get them out now. Fuck.
Okay.
So, we've already... Damn it.
Are the children gone?
So.
Okay.
They should... Fuck. Okay, all right, let's do it.
Okay, this one's called At the Down Low House Party by Danzy Smith. Don't expect no niggas to dance. Here we drink hen, hold the wall. Here, graze an elbow and pray it lasts forever. Everybody wants to touch a nigga, but don't. We say, what's good, meaning I could love you until my jaw turns to dust. We say, yo, meaning let my body be the falcon's talon and your body be the soft innards of goats. But we mostly say nothing. Just sip some good brown, trying to get drunk with permission. Sometime between here and being straight again, some sweet-boned, glittering boy shows up, starts voguing and shit. His sharp hips pierce our desire, make our mouths water and water, and we call him faggot, meaning bravery. And we call him faggot, meaning I often dream of you, flesh damp and confused for mine. And we call him faggot, meaning hail the queen, hail the queen. And we call him faggot, meaning I've been waiting ages to dance with you. And we'll continue. Danzy Smith.
That was so good. That gave me, like, all the vibes and feel. That was beautiful.
Well, he's great.
Those words, like, it's weird because it's like, words can make you feel things, which is why they're so incredibly important. But like the way they're like so strong together, that was amazing. I wish I had that at the rehearsal because they need to read that poem and make them
right.
Like, oh, we need to write a better script.
And I wanted to read that one because it shows the intersection of being what's acceptable black, what's being acceptable gay, what's, you know, all of the
masculinity,
intermixing of language.
All of that stuff. Yeah. Inner desires.
Even though it was,
stuff.
You know, I'm a very polite person, so saying certain words makes me feel uncomfortable. But I'm
not
doing
on
this
the weekends.
Okay. Stop it.
Not off the mic.
Stop it. Next one up is Morgan Parker. Now, Morgan Parker is a black woman, does not identify as queer. Mm-hmm. Her newest book is called They Are the Most Beautiful Thing. There Are More Beautiful Things Than Beyonce. I believe I talked about Morgan Parker in an earlier episode.
I think you talked about this specific book.
Yeah, because I remember us joking about there are more beautiful things than Beyonce.
And we were like, you're right, there are. There's Aneke. There is.
So I'm bringing back Morgan Parker because Renee also liked Morgan Parker.
Fan favorite.
Fan favorite. So she gave an interview for Nylon.com. And she said, when people think of poetry, they're not thinking about my work. It doesn't rhyme. It's not pleasant. I think that people have this idea of poetry with a capital P that is very outdated. And it's white, very male, and very digestible. That's not the power of poetry. The power of poetry is to be able to respond to real life, into politics, into one's body, and the most intimate thoughts. To render it in a way that is surprising and sonically interesting, and allowing the reader to feel playful in language, and to push the limits of what language can do. I think there is so much about that tradition of poetry that is problematic, and we don't think of black womanhood as something that's reflective in poetry. So even that feels subversive. That was basically like poetry.
I thought that was her poem. She can't even help it. She's like just walking poetry. And it's so true. Like a lot of times, like I really do feel like those like ABA rhymes, and no offense, if that's what you were literally writing as we speak, you were writing your ABA rhyme. That is cute.
Yeah, you do.
But, like,
you do
little,
your art.
Do you? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does feel a little
stale.
Know, like,
it's time
little,
to mix it up.
Stale. I was going to say stale. Like it's refraining me. And poetry wants to just burst through the bosom of man.
Yes.
The man who wants to be inside you, the womb, Lady Tiger.
Yes.
Jennifer Ooh. Hudson. She don't play here.
Okay. Snap, snaps. All the snaps. All right. Who else? Okay. So that was Morgan Parker.
Okay.
Next on the list is Arcelle Guirme. Now, Arcelle Guirme is a black woman.
Okay.
She does not identify as queer.
Okay.
And her newest book is called The Black Maria. And, you know, there's, let me see if I can find a quote for you from her. There's an excerpt. So here we go. Maybe he will be the boy who studies stars. Maybe he will be, say it, the boy on the coroner's table, splayed and spangled by an officer's lead, as if he, too, weren't made of a trillion glorious cells and sentences trying to last.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That was Arcelle Guirme, G-I-R-M-A-Y.
Mm.
Okay, so look out for her.
I wish, yes. I mean, it's just like that just makes you, it's so interesting how these words allow you to think in such a way, because it's just so nonlinear and you have to just sort of like let it sort of sit with you.
Yeah.
But just like the power that art has, and I think especially like in today's world, like I think one of the other poets that you were talking about, like poetry's true, you know, power, not necessarily just, you know, Shakespeare lamenting about the dark lady or that boy that he was in love with, you know, there's like other things that you can do with it.
Yes. There's some, it's, that's one of the, so poetry kind of gets a bad rap, and that's another reason why I'm doing a second segment on poetry, especially with, people who you wouldn't normally associate with poetry. Because it is such an art form that is completely malleable. You can change it and modify it and mix it and do whatever, and it's still poetry.
And it seems it's also very accessible, because I feel like sometimes, you know, if I'm going to write, Yeah, I love writing, and but like I had to really understand a lot. Like, there's all the mechanic, there's the mechanics of grammar,
right?
Right. Mm-hmm. They, you have to like know all this sort of stuff. But like for poetry, it's so accessible that wherever your skill set is, it's enough.
Exactly.
Like
poetry
literally, and that's what art in general just says. Wherever you are right now is enough. So go to work.
I love it. Ooh, I love that. That was good, James. Snaps to that.
I'm inspired by all this beautiful art
We're
you're reading to me.
We're just two poets right now. Okay, so
flowing through my veins.
Next up is Aziza Barnes. And Aziza Barnes is a queer Black woman. And her newest book is called I Be But I Ain't. And her reading is... This one is called Ezra. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's long, but I'm going to read just one quick little paragraph.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Pay me what you owe me in properties of remembrance, dude. This due to the mother of my current predicament, a lowly instrument to ritual. The payment in question has a computer, a memory, and the nerve to bitch. I am thoroughly addicted to Shakespeare. Talk that is the talk of nothing. Dreams, the debut of I'd Rather Be With You. May I unlive the gentle strike of your cotton-picking hands. Yosemite Sam was a racist. In guns, endeavor, my kid laugh. Laugh kin to laugh, a baby sister fell asleep head first in her cereal. Never mind that we all... expiring, for real, convicted of a lonely vibration, my dear, I is, and I lay up under whomever and picture the first of things, seeing my government name in the Bible, not my full name, but my first, and I am cut in the subliminal fashion.
See, I particularly always find, like, when I go to, like, poetry readings or, like, poetry slams, I really perk up when it, like, Black female poets, you really get me. You get to me, ladies. Because there's just, like, you speak from, there's just so much. Mm-hmm. And, like, for me, it's, like, the more that layers that you have, the more intersectionality or the more groups that you can speak of, and a lot of times the poetry allows for that to just sort of come out, then the more, like... Then the more, you know, I just want to sit up and listen to what is your story and what is your pain. I want to hear it. I want to feel it. So I want to bear witness to it, right?
Yes. That's good. I love that. We're moving on from a Black woman. Oh,
okay. Well, good. Well, no. I'll tune out for the rest. You're like, James, what are you doing? Wait, what? Oh, yeah. And like, that was great.
I know.
That was great. The thing that she said about the dog and the log.
So.
And the mat and the cat.
Franny Choi. Is a Korean-American woman, and you might be familiar with her name because she was a part of the collective with Danzy Smith. She is the author of Floating, Brilliant, Gone, Right Bloody, and which was published in 2014, and the forthcoming chapbook, Death by Sex Machine. She has been a finalist for multiple national poetry slams and received fellowships from... the Rhode Island State Council of the Arts. She's also been in the Huffington Post, PBS NewsHour. So she is doing shit.
She is working it out.
So I'm going to read an excerpt from the man who shouted, I like pork fried rice at me on the street.
Ooh.
You want me to eat out, right? What does it taste like? You want to eat me out of these jeans and into something a little cheaper, more digestible, more bite-sized, more thank you, come. I am greasy for you. I slick my hair with MSG every morning. I'm bad for you. Got some red light district between your teeth. What does it taste like? A takeout box between my legs, plastic bag lady, flimsy white fork to snap in half, dispose of me. Tastes like dried squid. Lips puffy with salt, lips brimming with foreign, so call me pork, curly-tailed obscenity being playing in the mud, dirty meat, worms in your stomach give you a fever, dead meat, butcher girl chopped up and cradling in styrofoam, you candid cannibal, you want me bite-sized, no eyes clogging your throat. But I've been watching from the slaughterhouse, ever since you named me edible, tossed in a cookie at the end, lucky man. Go and take what's yours. Name yourself archaeologist, but listen carefully to the squelches in your teeth and hear my sow squeal, scream, murder between molars. Watch salt awaken, writhe, Synapse, watch me kick back to life. Watch me tentacles and teeth. Watch me resurrect electric. What does it taste like? Revenge. Squirming alive in your mouth, strangling you quiet from the inside out.
Well, I take it back because, you know, Asian female poets, you're throwing it down. You get me too. I'm feeling it too.
I was only going to read an excerpt, but I just couldn't stop on that one. It was just too good.
Don't you dare stop. Don't you dare. And again, just making you like think about all the things. And it's like, because you have to really listen when you're like listening to poetry. Like you have to like really listen to the words and see them like connect. Yep. And find those connection. I'm also seeing a theme of teeth in the last two ones.
Teeth are very interesting.
I mean, I lost part of my tooth today, so it's like, I get it. I can really connect to these pieces.
You're connecting to that. You're finding your truth within the teeth today.
Yes, it is true.
Okay, so next up is Rachel McKibbins, and she's a Latina. Her books are Pink Elephant, Into the Dark, and Emptying Fields. And I'm going to read this poem called Shiv. Is it long? It's not that long. I'll read just the first excerpt. November 14th, in the coffee shop, the man in the Make America Great Again hat smiles at me, so I take this as an invitation. Pardon me, but I have to ask, do you think Trump's ideologies keep every person in this country safe? He doesn't hesitate. Ma'am, I can't get wrapped up in identity politics. All I can worry about is how I'm going to feed my girls.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the first part. And it goes on, it's really long and great. So I highly suggest that you check it out. I will give you the links. And that's Rachel McKibbins. And that poem was called Sheev. And in the about, she describes herself as mama, writer, bruja. And I love that because bruja is witch in Spanish.
Yeah. I love that too. Because I think that speaks to... Just like female's power and something that is like, I think there's such energy behind so many cultures have like, you know, women as, you know, witches maybe call it as different things, but it's a powerful, beautiful thing of someone who understands nature and the elements and like the way that we think about the world. We are so caught up in our patriarchal, like, you know, Bible-y parts of science that we want to take in, and it's very limiting. Like, we've lost our touch with nature, and like women of different cultures had this connection to it, and I love that, like, ownership and empowerment. Yes. And that's why like men fucking like feared it. They fucking like feared women so much. And like, witch,
labeled it a witch.
She's a witch. She's behexed me. Because we were talking about the crows earlier offline.
Exactly. We were. Crows get a bad rap.
Yeah. I was just going to say, if y'all don't know, Aneke informed me that crows are very intelligent.
They are. They're very smart creatures. And in fact, one thing that I didn't tell you when we were talking on the phone, crows are one of the first birds to actually use tools.
What? Like a calculator?
No, like a stick to like prod out bugs.
That is hella smart. Like crows are hella smart. They're not like this, like, and that's why people like freak out about them because they're just like, damn, that bird. Because there was that bird that was bringing that little girl treasures.
Yeah,
right?
There was a crow that was bringing a little bird in exchange for like food, shiny trinkets. Which I thought
and
was
so
beautiful.
Which is so beautiful. I mean, it's a little weird. But like she's, you know, but like if this was 1866, I would see some man would see that and be like, that little girl's a witch.
It's true.
She's behexing that crow.
It's very true.
People
oh,
just they get scared and afraid of things they don't understand,
which is the truth of the world,
which is like witches.
Yep. Oh, there you go. A little alliteration for our poetry corner.
Yeah.
Okay, next up, and I have two more to read, is Justin Chin. Justin Chin is a queer Chinese American poet who came up in the 90s Bay Area slam scene. His poems are nuanced and super funny. This one is a poem called, drumroll please, Lick My Butt.
Well worth the wait.
Okay. Lick the dry shit out of my sweaty butt cheeks. I've had my hepatitis shot, so it's okay. lick my butt, because I'm an angry ethnic fag and I am in so much pain, so lick my butt. And the next time when there's a multicultural extravaganza and I'm asked for referrals, I can say, I know this guy. He's really cool. He licked my butt. Lick my butt and tell me about Michel Foucault's theories of deconstruction and how it applied to popular culture and depressed economy and this overwhelming tide of alienation. Lick my butt from the center to the margins and all the way back again. Read Noam Chomsky in bed to me and lick my butt. Lick my butt and give me Prozac. Lick my butt and call your mother. She misses you. Flea dip the cat and lick my butt. Recycle and lick my butt. Lick my butt like you really mean it. Don't just put your tongue there because you think it's something you should do. Do it because you really, really want to lick my butt. My butt didn't always like to be licked. On the contrary, it hated anything wet and sloppy, poking blindly at its puckered dour grimace. All it wanted was a nice pat, an occasional squeeze, and a good warm smear and snug underwear. Sear and snug underwear. It was happy with those, but then all those other butts started crashing in on its turf, on the sidewalks, and under my bed. There were all these butts that said, no, demanded, lick me. But my butt got tired of all that shit, and it just had to see what the fuss was all about. So that's just a part of it, because it goes on for a long time.
I've never had you tell me lick my butt so many times. It's great. There's just so many times I'm like, Aneka just keeps telling me to lick my butt.
It goes on. It's good. I highly suggest that is good. It. He's good.
That is a good one. That is solid.
Yeah.
I love slam poetry.
So that is Justin Chin. There was a tribute to Justin at the San Francisco Library, so that's really cool.
Whoa, yeah. Hey, that's in your neighborhood.
I will try and get this list to all you guys so you can do some further research, because these poems, some of them I read one poem, some of them I read excerpts, some of them I didn't have any time to read what they wrote, but check them out, get excited about art and poetry, and dabble in it yourself. It feels good to write.
Yeah, that's what I was inspired about it. Like, I think everyone's got words to say. So get out there, do some poetry, yo. Get out there and lick my butt.
That's how we're going to end this?
I was going to say, that poem's already been written, so you got to do something else. Lick my toe. Oh, Britney Spears already said that live on stage. So lick, fill in the blank. It's like a Mad Lib.
Yeah, there we go. Ending this beautiful life. Poetry segment about Mad Libs. Because that's how we do in the Minority Corner.
Mad Lib it, y'all. Here we go. Gonna teach you something that you don't know, yo.
Oh, yes. That worked out wonderfully.
I see what I did.
Look at you spitting bars.
Ooh, I got you. I got you. I got you right now. Coming at you hard. Get out of my face.
Okay. All right. There we go.
Here we go. This one is all because, you know, I was realizing because it's Women's History Month and I want to celebrate women. And then specifically what I wanted to do is I feel like it's been a while since I feel like I did not know a lot about trans historic figures.
Yes.
And so what I wanted to do, and so sorry, I'm going to specifically just highlighting historical trans women figures, because I think like if we again, history is important. I think it allows people to not be so afraid of things, and we wouldn't be trying to tell people which bathroom to go and in if we
right. Like, who gives a fuck? Just let people pee in peace.
Yes. So I've got some figures. So I'm not going to talk about the ones in details, the ones that you probably already know about. Like, some folks know about like Lily Ebb, 1882 mm-hmm. Denmark.
Wasn't this a movie? Wasn't this a movie that was made?
I think so, and that's why everybody like knows about that. Mm-hmm. And you can revisit episode 4, our earlier days, where I talked about Stonewall. Specifically, I talked about Martha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera.
Yes.
Who Sylvia Rivera is credited with throwing the first heel. Both were heavily involved in like the Stonewall riots and just the protests that happened out of that. So revisit episode 4 to take a look at those, because I already talked about them.
And also, don't go see that stupid ass movie Stonewall, because apparently they got washed out of history on that one.
Oh, they did. And we talk about that actually in that episode way back when. So if you're listening to this podcast and you watched that movie, I mean, I hope you didn't pay for it. Because it's like focus on like Danny Winterbottom. Who the fuck is Danny Winterbottom?
Fake character. Danny Winters. When there was intriguing characters that were existing at the time.
So first what I want to talk about, Miwaha.
Okay.
Miwaha was a member of the Zuni tribe who was profiled by and interacted heavily with anthropologists. Because you know they're just like, I don't understand this. Let me look at it.
Right.
And so Miwaha was a member of the Ihamana or Two Spirit. So a lot of First Nations and a lot of cultures have like what we call transgender folks, but they refer to these people as like two spirit, that they they embodied both male and female binaries, right? So,
and but like, isn't that different though? I mean, I might be stupid by saying this, but wouldn't that be considered non-binary as opposed to the trans community?
What I want to challenge is that, like, we're already so limited because we've decided that we're going to define everything. Gay, straight, da-da-da-da-da. Right. But other cultures just saw, like, there was so much more freedom into it.
Right.
And so I would say it's such a limited way that, like, we're already limiting ourselves because the way that we're so for, like, again, like, other cultures don't necessarily have names for, like, gay and lesbian, right? Like, it's just like, oh, they're just doing that thing. So it's like, we're already so limited. But I wanted to celebrate this person because, and just to open it up with this, because if we kind of view, because I view people who think outside of, who are outside of the binaries as magical, wonderful, amazing people. Not like magical in the sense of like, oh, you're so magical, but like in other cultures and tribes, these people were the shaman, or these people were like, you know, the people that were so connected to other energies and stuff. And so it's interesting that in our culture, we shun these people, and in other cultures in the past, these folks were celebrated, ones who were beyond.
I hear you.
So then there's Mary Jones, who in 1836, she worked in NYC as one of the oldest professions, which means she was a
prostitute.
Exactly. She was a sex worker. And arrested.
Oh, sorry. I should say sex worker, not prostitute. But see, is prostitute derogatory?
But back then they called it a prostitute. Or they called it a woman of the night, depending on which pop diva song you're listening to, right? You know?
Red Light District.
So she was arrested in 1836 after a male client slept with her. But why? Why do you think they were arrested her?
Just fear, probably. Male client said some shit.
No, he knew what he was getting himself into. No, but she, trying to survive, pickpocketed the fuck out of him. She sold...
Oh, I love that. Get your money, girl.
But she sold $99, which today equates about $2,600.
Okay, taking it too far.
She really went for it.
That's a lot of money.
And so when they went to go search her, they discovered it was a cisgender man. Then she was put up on trial, and she was the talk of the town because she was up... I mean, listen, she was going up there looking fierce and elegant, as she do, and she said... Yeah. She's like, I have always attended parties among the people of my own color dressed in this way. And in New Orleans, I always dressed in this way. So.
Oh, was she black?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. She was a black woman.
Okay.
She was a black woman. And she was apparently able to. So apparently, like, some men knew she was a woman, and some men were, quote unquote, tricked because she had been fitted with a piece of cow pierced and open like a woman's womb. And held up by a girdle. So she had like a fake pussy, essentially. Can I say that? Pussy?
Oh.
She had a fake vagina.
Interesting.
And so the court was incredibly cruel. And they pointed and laughed at her. They snatched off her wig, which you just don't even
Jesus.
Remember. And she was sentenced to 5 years of state prison and prison for grand larceny. And then we have Frances Thompson, former slave. Okay. First trans woman to ever testify before a congressional committee in the U.S. So in 1866, she testified before a committee investigating a riot that had occurred in Memphis. What was this riot, you asked?
Fresh out of slavery, too. Let's just point that out.
Stones throw away. And so for 3 days, white men rioted through a community of emancipated slaves. 48 for 3 days.
Three days.
Where was CNN then, right? Where was CNN then calling out the thugs?
They wouldn't have been there even if they existed.
They would have said revelers. They're like, oh, they're just boys will be boys. 48
Fuck that shit.
48 African Americans were murdered. 80 were injured, what? And five Jesus. Women testified to being raped. So again, oh when we God. Talk about history, when Ben Carson comes out and says that we are immigrants, yada, 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 and Nikki, this is American history. How come this is the first yes. time I'm hearing about this, right?
I don't know about this. This is the first time I ever heard about this shit, too.
And it's like a stone's throw away from like the time period when the, you know, Texas Rangers were going in and shooting.
This is the same time period.
Right.
Yep.
And so we keep repeating this. I feel like I could stop my segment right here. We keep repeating this shit because we don't talk about it. And folks. Exactly. And folks in the South want to run their mouth that they are so saintly and so godly. You're monsters. Your ancestry is monstrous, and it's filled with murder and rape, and we need to talk about this.
Right. I wouldn't go far as to call them monsters, but the history is monstrous.
Oh, these people are monsters. Your ancestry is monstrous. Like, if you're...
Oh, you're not talking about the people currently sitting.
Oh, like... I don't know you. I don't. Yeah, I know. Listen, you are my Jennifer Lopez to my Mariah Carey. I don't know you.
People in the past.
But your ancestors have, like, been... Your ancestors have been to lynchings. Yeah. They've killed people. Like it's we need to talk about it. So 10 years later, she was arrested for being a man dressed in women's clothing and arrested for transvestism, as they called it.
Why arrest somebody for that? Like, that ain't hurting nobody. There's
a lot of the women on this, and this is what I'm talking about. Like, you know, it's the same. Today it's the bathrooms, but back then it was, you know, what they were wearing. And so the papers, they were trying to discredit her essentially because she was testifying in Congress. So then we go to 1886, Lucy Hicks Anderson, one of the earliest fighters for marriage equality in the U.S. Also African-American. I think everyone I've read was African-American.
Oh, damn.
At an early age, presented as a girl and went by Lucy, which, who are your dope-ass parents, Lucy? Because that is dope. They're like, all right, that's Lucy, dope. Do your thing. Do it.
Yes.
So she had went from, like, Texas.
Let the child be who she is.
Yeah. And so, again, like, not being hung up on these binaries. Like, this is, like, I think there's something, I will say this, I think there's something magical to know who you really are at a very young age and to say, this is bullshit.
Right.
Like, I am, and, like, it's something, like, you know, to remember that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Like, that is what, you know, and if you get to that essence of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some folks just know earlier on. So she was in Texas, then she went to Mexico, and New Mexico.
I was going to specify.
The newest of the Mexicos.
Yeah.
She was in the new one. And she married Clarence Hicks and moved to Oxnard, California, where she started a business. She was an entrepreneur.
Damn, get a woman.
She was a lady woman entrepreneur in one of the oldest professions.
Oh. Sex worker.
She ran a brothel.
She was a madam.
She ran that shit. She was like, you know what? I know what they want. Right?
Stop it.
But she divorced Hicks in 1929. She was like, okay. And then she married Reuben Anderson, who was a soldier in 1944. Happened was the signing of this marriage license led to, I guess they were like, he was upset with her and he's like, I'm going to divorce you. And then the signing of the marriage license then led to perjury charges because she swore that there were no legal objections.
Oh.
And she said, I defy any doctor in the world to prove that I am not a woman. I lived, dressed, acted just what I am, a woman.
Yes.
So because they're saying that she had signed and been like, you know, I'm a woman. And they're saying that was because the husband was like, I don't want to be with you anymore. Like he... Like, and that's the thing, all of these guys, like, you know, that's the thing, even back then, like, these guys know who, like, these women are.
Right.
And so this is, like, nothing new. Like, I feel like people think, like, these, like, trans experiences or these stories are new.
They're not.
And if these people were more indoctrinated into our history, we'd be less afraid of them, right?
Right. We would be understanding that this is just... People.
It's just life.
This is just life. People. This is the way it is.
As an evolved spiritual being, like, this is, like, there are more things to worry about. Like, why do we have so much corn? Let's talk about that.
What?
I don't...
What?
We have too much corn, farmers.
Because
I'm still mad at you because I had lost an hour of sleep. I don't want to go on a tangent, but I lost an hour of sleep, and we all know who's
to
blame.
We have farmers listening to us now.
Well, listen, y'all need to, you know, put something on the measures. I don't want to be waking up early next year, so fix it.
James has no chill. Okay, let's go.
All right. So I'm tired of waking up and losing that hour. So she was still found guilty. And then of fraud because she received allotment checks as the wife of a U.S. Army soldier. But that's fucked up. So it's like double criming her because she got those checks from her husband, which is from the government. And they're like, oh, but you're not a woman and you got those checks and you were not supposed to be married to
him. Bullshit.
Ugh. So moving on to the next one. Okay. We're going to France. We are going to France for this one. This is Cosinelle, which is the French word for...
Concubine?
Ladybug.
Ladybug.
Ladybug. She was born in Paris in 1931.
Oh, no, I feel bad. I didn't mean... Well, we were just talking about the oldest profession many times.
One, just to switch it up, she was an actress, entertainer, singer, and activist. Mm-hmm.
Yes!
And she was one of the first people to undergo a successful gender confirmation surgery. And in 1952, she began taking hormones. And she became very popular joining other famous trans women of the time at Le Carousel de Paris nightclub, where trans women like April Ashley, Marie Perry Prevost, and Amanda Lear, which where is this movie of these ladies?
Like this needs to be a movie. This would be, when is this in the 50s? That would be some elegant costumes. Get costume award for the Oscars.
You know what? Mm-hmm. This might happen because last time we said, where's that Hidden Figures movie?
And it came out!
A year later. So see it next year, y'all.
We got the sight.
We got the sight. We got the That's a Raven.
Mm-hmm.
And where is James's Oscar movie? Ooh, that's coming next year, too. So they were featured in several films. Several films due to her popularity. Mm. In fact, Italian singer Gigo Agosti dedicated a song to her.
Oh, wow.
So she was very successful. And she also, France changed its laws. Mm-hmm. After she went through her surgery, they changed their laws to allow for people to go back and change their birth certificates.
Oh.
Following their successful gender confirmation surgery.
Oh, good. So. That was the first time, huh?
Yeah, they were like, okay, well, all right, we can change it up. So that's in the 50s.
Nice.
That was France.
Go France.
So then Louise Lawrence began living fully as a woman in the 1940s in San Francisco. She was an artist and a manager for an apartment building for women.
Okay, cool.
She lived with her partner, a woman named Gay.
Yeah.
They created a widespread correspondence network with other transgender people through the U.S. and Europe. And this is before the internet.
This is like, these are heroes. She created like a network so people could know that there's a community out there for them.
Right. Isn't that, it's so amazing. And she actually laid the groundwork for, there's another woman, another transgender woman, Virginia Prince. Mm-hmm. She developed the magazine Transvestia magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And through this, Louise Lawrence already built up the subscription list for her.
Oh,
for
wow.
Her magazine.
That's good.
And Virginia Prince also created a society for the second half, which was like, so they started to develop groups and communities out of the work that Louise Lawrence did.
Mm.
Louise Lawrence also worked with Alfred Kinsey, who developed the Kinsey scale.
Oh, good.
And
yeah.
Wait for this, Dr. Harry Benjamin.
Who's Benjamin?
Oh, I don't know. I was hoping you would be like, oh, yeah, Harry Benjamin, who did... I never heard of him before, but she worked with both of these guys, and I guess they did some good stuff.
Oh, awesome.
Just three more. We have Clarette Brown.
Okay.
There is a very cute picture of Miss Clarette Brown on the cover of Jet Magazine in 1953, October 15th.
Jet Magazine!
She's on the cover of Jet Magazine, October 15th, 1953.
Damn!
Right?
Yes! Get it!
I mean, I feel like there's not been someone, like, who... I mean, maybe Laverne Cox since then has been on the cover, you know, like another trans woman or even Janet Mock.
Is this
maybe
terrible? But is Jet still in operation, right?
Do they have a website?
I think so. I think they're up and running.
You're doing your thing, Jet. We're going to be on the cover of Jet Magazine. They are, because I think Stacey Dash was not recently, but maybe it was a few.
No.
Oh, I went to the library the other day and discovered. That's right. I went to a library.
Oh.
The elevator smelled like farts.
Oh, well, you know, people can't control their bodily body.
But I stumbled upon what I realized when you write a book, you should make the spine very eye catching because those are the only books that I looked at. If it had like a picture, like some fun fonts.
Really? You're telling me this?
I thought you would be happy that I went to the library for an hour looking around.
And then you talked to me about how pictures, you're like, the shiny pictures.
Well, and then I ended up in the graphic novel section.
Okay, well, that's good.
But when your spine has like fun things on the side, it just, it's eye popping. I'm just saying, as a casual, I have a Saturday, I'm going to the library, catch my eye books, catch my eye. I'm only coming by once.
And Jet Magazine is still in existence, so good. Shut my mouth.
So Claret Brown, she was, so Christine Jorgensen was actually the first American to undergo, the first, successful confirmation surgery. So keep that in mind as we talk about Claret Brown.
Okay.
So Claret Brown was like, me too, girl. I want that. But, yes. So, and also what was Claret Brown before? She was one of the oldest professions, which...
Concubine?
She was in the Navy.
Why do you do this to me? You just want me to seem like I'm a dick on here, on this podcast. I promise.
She was an African-American Navy vet.
Yes, and get it.
She also worked as a female impersonator and a shake dancer in nightclubs.
What's a shake dancer? That sounds fun.
Right. Well, so she discovered that she was intersex when she was in the Navy. And so doctors were like, hey, you should just become a dude because, you know, just be a dude. And she was like, no, sign me up for what Christine had. I want to be who I really feel like I am more of a woman than anything else.
Yes.
Problem was the U.S., like she couldn't get the surgery done in the U.S. or something. So and then the nations that did the surgery didn't allow for foreign nationals. So she was like, fuck this. I'm revoking my U.S. citizenship. I don't care. I just want to become. And she said, she was like, I just want to become a woman as quickly as possible. That's all. I'll become a citizen of any country that will allow me the treatment that I need and be operated on.
Yes.
But before she could leave, she was arrested of anti-cross-dressing laws.
What the fuck? The stupidest shit.
And then ordered to pay back taxes if she had like $1,200 on back taxes.
What?
And so that's why Jet Magazine chronicalized her story along with her and Sir Lady Hava. And but after she paid her taxes, she disappeared. Nobody know. Her story went cold.
Fuck.
So I had mentioned Sir Lady Hava, and you're like, who was that, James? Who was that, you say? Well, funny you should ask. She's next up on the list.
Thanks for asking for me.
I got that sight, remember?
You do. A raven to me.
Always. Born and raised in New Orleans, she later moved to L.A., and she was a sensation with her brick house-like stature.
Ooh, okay.
She had 38, 24, 38.
I don't know tiny waist.
But those were her stats. 38, 24, 38.
And that so she is did like, ridiculous.
She did singing impressions and she was an amazing dancer. And she challenged the city's rule number 9, which,
what's that?
Not to be confused with Mambo number 9, a lot less fun.
What is it?
This is a law that banned this is a law that like was like, you can't cross dress it. You can't ban cross dressing. So women have to wear women clothes.
Which is such, it makes no sense. Why is that a law? Like, come on.
Well,
like,
then this one cop came up into the Fox Club where she performed, and they were like, I'm going to shut this place down because you are rule number nine. I see rule number 9 all up in here. And she was like,
that cop is a dick.
She was like, this is stupid. And so in 1967, she worked with the ACLU to argue that the law was unconstitutional.
Yes.
And that it was preventing her from making money because that's her income. Because that was her job. She couldn't do it. Money talks.
Right.
Then, sadly, the challenge was thrown out on a technicality.
Oh. What's the technicality?
They probably like didn't file something correctly or something.
Oh.
But, good news, she is still alive today. So that's fun.
Oh, okay. Fun. What's she doing?
Coming on this podcast. I bet
you. Oh, that'd be tight. Are you out there? Come on.
Are you listening? All right. I was going to burn through these last two here. So we have Roberta Cowell. She was British, and she was born in 1918. After her service for the British Air Forces, she became the first woman to undergo gender confirmation surgery for England.
Oh,
and she was a pilot.
Okay, and this is in 1918.
Well, she was born in 18, so I don't...
Okay, so probably like 1930-something.
Maybe in like the 40s, 50s or something. I don't know.
Okay, cool. Okay.
And then there's Renee Richards, who was denied entry into the U.S. Open in 1976.
Denied?
Because she was assigned male at birth. So the U.S. Open was like... Oh. And not being that open, not living up to your name, U.S. Open.
It is not
that
open.
That is the U.S. closed, is what that is. I-N-U.
U.S. dicks.
U.S. fuck you.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're doing. They're saying, fuck you. And she called bullshit on all of that. And she challenged the ban to the NY Supreme Court. And guess what? She won.
Yes.
She won.
Supreme Court. All right. Like, mm-hmm. There we go. Finally, some success on the legal side of things.
Oh, one bonus one. There is Angela Morley, who is a classical composer, and she became famous for her work as a soundtrack artist for television and film. So she's a composer. You've heard her music. She also won nominated for 2 Academy Awards and several Emmys for her work on TV shows like Dallas and Dynasty. She's the one doing all the music behind her, White Crystal and What's-Her-Face are fighting in the pool. She's the one directing the strings. She's like, more. They're fighting.
Yes. So she directed the music behind Who Shot JR.
She was like, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
She was like, you know what this means?
Dun, dun, dun.
But she also worked for many years under the name Walter Scott. And then returned to the industry following her gender confirmation surgery.
Good. I did not know this stuff. This is fucking fascinating. I love it. We need to hear more about these stories so we could know about the rich history that makes American and world history way more interesting.
You know what? Like, and so it's not enough just to like not be mean to people and to just like, live in, I mean, we need to understand. I feel like part of the, where's the empathy of like understanding who people really are, not just like loving you just because you're a human, but like, I love you because I understand you.
Right. And I respect you.
And I'm talking to that show I'm quitting. I'm like, you need to do some research. So anyways, ladies, we celebrate you.
Yes.
Way to do it up.
Happy Women's Month. Thank you so much.
Chaotic Bro.
Natural Jaeger.
Picosby.
Mount Armus.
The USS Entrepreneur.
Dustbuster Club.
Drunk Shimoda.
What are we talking about? Some of the many delightful nonsenses that are now important running gags in the Star Trek podcast we still can't believe we're actually making.
The Greatest Generation is a show that is reviewing Star Trek The Next Generation episode by episode, but it's much sillier and has more fart jokes than that makes it sound.
Our reputations may never recover. You can get our show at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Quizlet Corner.
Hey, we're here now. I always feel like it's so fun. It's like revisiting an old friend.
I know,
hey,
we haven't done, girl, a Quizlet in a minute.
How you doing, Quizlet? You doing good, girl? Okay, I see you.
Welcome back. You're looking good, looking fresh, looking hot.
She's refreshed. She is here, and she's like, I got 3 things for you. And she tells me, what's that, Quizlet? What's that, girl?
I am into the personification of Quizlet.
Well, okay. I'm speaking for her. She says there are 3 questions and one of them is not true, is what she said.
All right. I'm ready.
First one. Students advertise Straight Pride Day in Indiana to take back the rainbow.
What? Okay.
Could be true. Could not be true. Number 2. There's only 3 this week.
Okay, good.
Aretha Franklin retired from singing and Patti LaBelle responded, good riddance, child. Ooh, ding dong, the witch is dead. Now maybe someone can tell me where my background singers that are at. Did you see that? Oh, Lord.
That is a long quote.
Could be true. Could not be true. Last one. Samuel Jackson thinks, and I quote, what Get Out would have been with an American brother who really feels that.
Okay.
One of these is not true.
Well, I know which one is fake.
Oh, are you sure?
I am positive because Aretha Franklin did not retire and Patti LaBelle did not say all that mess.
Oh, Eneke, it's No, Aretha Franklin did retire.
Oh, she did? But Patti LaBelle did not say that mess.
Oh, she did.
No, stop
she did
it, not James.
I was really trying to get you. I was like, okay, if I make it long and Neke will... I thought I would get you with the background singers. She was like in on it. Like, oh, did you see that?
She does but not what listen she did... to our podcast.
What she did say is, she said they asked if she was going to retire, and she's like, child, I would be singing with my boots on until I fall down. Then she laughed.
I love says, her.
And then she said, but she's, you know what she said? This is what I love this quote. She says, but my girl Aretha, I am sad to see, I am sad to hear that because I love her, and not to be able to see her again live, it's not so cute, girl. But God bless her because she probably has her own great reasons why she feels it's her time to retire. But I was just so sad to hear it. So that's what she said.
Ooh, she threw some shade in there saying that what? It wasn't
Where's the
cute
shade?
In person.
Oh, well.
But that is Miss Patty.
No, she says that not being able to see her live again is not cute. Like, it's not cute that she can't see her
live. Oh, I thought that she was saying that her live performances weren't cute.
No, she's saying that it's not cute that she can't see her live anymore.
Oh, okay. Keeping it classy, Patti LaBelle. I love her.
Right?
I love her so much.
See, everyone wants to put them in together. And you know what? Especially because Aretha did snub her. And so Patti
she
taking
did.
The
Aretha's
high,
a bitch.
Taking the high level. All right. So you're right. You got that right.
Yay.
Can we? So
but I'm sad because Indiana, what the fuck you doing?
Jasper High School. And
what the fuck you doing?
They put up a poster that said, celebrate being straight at JHS by not annoying the heck out of everyone about your sexual orientation.
And what the fuck?
It said, brought to you by all the students that are sick of hearing about your LGBT pride. Nobody cares about what you think you are. If you want equality, stop shoving your ideas down our throat. We have nothing against your sexual orientation. We
what?
Just don't care. So people think
what?
That, yeah. Can I? And then the 16-year-old who put this up, and it's like the school's not done anything. They're just like, okay. Like, they're not saying
why
no
to this.
Why did
they punish the hell out of this kid?
So then
this
the kid,
junior bigot.
Then the newspaper interviewed him, and he says that the purpose of my flyer was to not only recognize the straight community, but also to give a message to the LGBT community that equality is not effectively found in granting special privileges to minorities. Yeah, and then he said, then nobody should, he's like, if you want to be truly equal, then nobody should differentiate themselves from society by means of protective isolation and stating that they are not like others.
Someone give that kid a couple episodes of Minority Corner, because clearly he's living in a privileged ass bubble thinking that everything that he gets is just run of the mill and everybody gets the same privileges that he gets,
right?
Which is not true. And sometimes people have to fight for their rights just to exist. This kid
and
needs a kick in the face.
And clearly, like, he's being, like, supported. Like, no one is telling him otherwise, right? Like, there's...
Yeah,
there's...
like, why is the newspaper interviewing him? Why is the school letting him put all this stuff up? Like, why is he being allowed all of this?
And it's like, again, this is why we need to understand our history. And if he was maybe hearing these other stories of people who have had to overcome the adversity. Like, it's not like people just want a party for themselves. I wish I didn't have to have a special, like,
right.
thing for myself. I really wish, but it's like, it's in celebration and also in recognition and protest and standing up and solidarity. There's so many layers to it. And this kid he just doesn't get it. And I'm sad for him. And we need to educate him.
Yes.
Like Aneke said, find this student. And if you work at Jasper High School,
Play this podcast.
Yeah, just play it.
Samuel Jackson is a mess.
But I think, okay. So, yes, and...
Didn't we talk about this, though?
This one?
Black British actors aren't getting work, so they need to come over here.
Right, but, you know, and there's... First of all, have you seen Get Out? I saw Get Out.
I haven't seen it yet.
I went on a date. He's like a young Blair Underwood, but Blair Underwood don't crack. So it's like, he's like Blair Underwood. But Daniel, the actor guy, he's British. I didn't realize he was British until.
Yeah, he's on a really good episode of Black Mirrors.
Oh, he is. You're right. Yeah. So Daniel Kaluuya, you know?
Yeah.
So he said this in response, because he's like, you know what, Samuel, I love you. You're great. But he said, I'm dark skinned, bro. You know, when I'm around black people, I'm made to feel other because I'm dark skinned. Like, he's very, you know, he's had to wrestle with that. You know, he's like, I've had to wrestle with that, with people going, you're too black. Then I come to America and they say, you're not black enough. I go to Uganda. I can't speak the language. In India, I'm black. In the black community, I'm dark skinned. In America, I'm British, bro. Right. And he said, he's like, listen, I just want to tell black stories. And Samuel, you know, Samuel, I don't, he's, you know, older people sometimes, you know, but.
Yeah, you know, and he said some controversial things in the past, too. So he's not shying away from things.
Right. But he also brings up a really good point, because he also says, you know, it's not like the British, like the Brits, like we already know, they don't hire black American actors. But Hollywood also does have this idea, and I would agree with this, that black British actors are better trained. Like, it's almost like I might get passed up. Like, I watch, like, you know, even the lead guy on How to Get Away with Murder, the guy who plays Wes, like, he's British.
Yeah, he's British.
Like, the guy in Star Wars, British. Like, I, like, and, like, that role in How to Get Away with Murder, if I were to be on any Shonda Rhimes show, that would be the role I would probably play. I would have been up
for really?
I'd be up for Wes. I would be Wes.
Oh. You know what? That is interesting, and I think it kind of goes to our whole stereotype of most British actors. Like, we think, like, Royal Shakespeare Company, and we elevate them to a certain level when that's a stereotype.
Yeah. They're just people. They're just doing their training thing, so...
Right.
I do highly recommend Get Out. It is so good. Usually, when I watch a horror movie, it's usually some, you know, probably like white girl running around being chased. And I'm thinking in my chair, I'm like, I'm scared, but I feel safe. I'm scared, but I feel safe. Because it's not me. It's not Black James being chased around.
Yeah.
But this go around, I was like, I do not feel safe. I do not feel comfortable.
Oh, okay. I need to, because I feel like everybody in the world has seen this movie, and I literally haven't, because I've just been...
You've been doing things.
Busy with drinking.
But I would say, I was excited, because the last four movies that I've seen in the theater, all, like, leading black actors. I've seen...
Wow,
my last four movies, I saw Get Out, I saw Head and Figures... Fences and Moonlight. Those are the last four times I went to the movie theater. And I am...
We are having a black movie renaissance, y'all. Ooh, we are.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I am feeling it.
It's so true.
Well, Aneke, so true. Quizzet Corner is back, and she says, you won!
Yeah! That's my girl. Because I did it. I did it. I did it. Quizlet! Welcome back, y'all. We are back again.
Only to leave you again. Goodbye. Get out of my face. Oh, wait, no, that's the wrong.
I like that. That was good. That was...
Well, Aneke, it's been a pleasure. I'll see you later.
Yes.
Oh.
That's how we're okay.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
You guys can follow us on social media if you would like.
Yes, Minority Corner with a K on Twitter, on Facebook too, and then also join the Corner Kids Playground on Facebook. Max Fun Drive's coming up.
It's coming up. Get them dollars out. Get ready to support some great art and information and community and love.
Yes, and get a fucking pin. If you donate, you will get a pin that represents us.
Okay, now you can bring the children back, because we won't have any more F-bombs from the rest of this episode.
Oh, shit.
Get them out of the room again. Still on fire. Now they can come back into the room.
Well, James, it's been wonderful.
It's been a pleasure, because I'm not going to swear anymore. It's been a pleasure.
I'm very proper right now. I'm a proper lady.
See, why are the Brits always so... You know what? I'm American. I'm proper, too.
I know. We need to just embrace our accents.
Fuck that.
Oh, I thought we weren't cursing anymore.
Damn it. Oh, fuck. It's hard. I should be British. All right. Get me off this before I start swearing some more.
Bye, y'all.
Mark your calendars, because the 2017 Max Fun Drive is coming up. Starting March 20th, we'll be running some of the best shows of the year, offering amazing thank you gifts for new and upgrading members, celebrating friendship with a global Max Fun meetup day, and more. It's the single best time to become a member or increase your support to your favorite Max Fun shows like Minority Corner. The drive starts on March 20th and lasts for just 2 whole weeks. If you've been holding off on becoming a member, now is the perfect time to do so because the Max Fun Drive is your time to shine. So tune in and visit MaxFun.org for more details.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.